Chapter 22. Emperor's Flight, Angel of Light, Ave Imperator. A day had passed since Gilliman's departure. No word came back through the ruin storm. The Pharos Field was absent from the chapel. As if in sorrow, McCrag's weather turned sombre, clouds hanging heavy and grey over the Hera's Crown Mountains. Autumn was nearly done, and the first taste of winter came on the winds out of the east. Upon them, too, came an angel and an emperor. Sanguinius clove the sky on broad wings of brilliant white. Rabute Gilliman had suggested with his characteristic lack of charm that Sanguinius not undertake any risky venture. Flying was high on that list. Sanguinius had nodded at the time, feigning agreement, while simultaneously having every intention of ignoring his brother's suggestion. Rabute might as well command the eagle to stay earthbound. Flying was as easy as walking to Sanguinius, not that any of the others could appreciate that. Easier now, sometimes. When the weather was damp like this, his legs ached, the only physical legacy of his horrendous wounding at the hands of the warp fiend, Cabanda. The emotional hurt went far deeper. He closed his eyes and soared upon the buffeting updrafts of winds diverted skyward by the mountains. Squalls of sky-trapped rain pattered from his feathers. One mighty stroke sent him in a long loop towards the peak of Andromache. The severe beauty of Hera's Falls pouring down from the stone fields were hidden by streamers of white and grey. But he preferred this weather, and not only because it concealed him from his brother-appointed guardians. The switching wind made the flight a challenge, and the chill rain on his flesh was exhilarating. He wore a simple ceremonial breastplate of gold-plated plasteel cast in the semblance of his muscled torso, and so the rain freely soaked through his robes. A long sword was belted at his side. He could fly with his full battleplate, but it tired him. Besides, to be encased in ceramite and plasteel reminded him of his straitened circumstances. Battleplate became a warrior's prison while he could not go to war. In the air, he knew a freedom none could take away from him, and he preferred to enjoy it to the full. Stop flying, indeed. Sanguinius held Rabute in the highest regard. He might even love him, he supposed, in that distant way of long-separated brothers, but Rabute had an infuriating faith in organization above all else, as if all his plans and charts and minutely detailed observations could prepare him for anything. There was a reason their father had chosen Horus over Gilliman, to his own ruination. Sanguinius thought this even as he knew that he had been higher in their father's order of choice than Rabute. He could not countenance himself in the role. To think of that, he must consider the possibilities other powers had entertained for him. The lies and temptations of Kairis enraged him still. He shouted into the wind, his fists clenched. Never! 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 Beating his wings, he pushed himself higher and higher, far above the clouds and the top of the mountains, up to the uppermost envelope of atmospheric flight. He surfed on roaring jet streams. The rain froze on his skin. The air there was thin enough to suffocate a normal human being, but the spareness of it gave the angel only a thrilling burn in his lungs. He looked down upon the curve of Gilliman's world, cold and as well organized as the mind of its master. On the horizon, the atmosphere became so attenuated, he should have been able to see the stars and the blackness of space. There, instead, was the redness of the storm. A now familiar image flashed across his mind at the sight of it. His brother, Horus, bloated with unnatural power, standing triumphant over his broken corpse. The vision had come to him dozens of times, and was always the same, starting with his brother's changed features, the point of view panning inexorably downwards towards his own dead face. He could not turn away, nor could he halt the sorrow that came with it. This was not with his own sight he saw, but through the eyes of someone else. By that time, he was already dead. How many times he had had the vision, he no longer recalled. The first time he had dismissed it as a bad dream, and so it was. Now it pounded at him with the relentlessness of a truth yet to be. An angel's death. The vision changed. He had seen many different ends during the last months. This one was becoming dominant, clearer and more real as the others faded into obscurity. This was how he would die. He was increasingly sure of it. And so shall die Gilliman's dream of a new Imperium. His mood spoiled. Sanguinius ceased laboring upwards. Any further, and the air would not support his wings. Spreading them wide, he plummeted back towards the peaks protruding from the streaming grey cloud. He pierced the weather front out over the sea, and Magnum Crag Civitas opened like a child's hollow book, an ordered display of lights picking out straight roads and stern, martial buildings in the gloomy evening. He flew over the capital, smiling to himself at the thought of panicked gunnery crews rushing to deactivate their weapons, lest they kill their emperor. An unworthy jape, but it took the edge from his frustration. He wheeled around the city, heading up the mountainsides again, intending a further circuit, but the vox band on his wrist vibrated. He glanced at the heart-shaped ruby set into the metal. It pulsed redly, a specific rhythm that identified the caller. Ascalon. Sanguinius folded his wings like a stooping hawk, plummeting earthwards at a tremendous rate. The grey faces of the mountains blurred past him. The crowded buildings of the Fortress of Hera swelled, the statuary and decoration upon the ridges and roof peaks presenting themselves in ranks of stone spears. He headed for the ramparts near the sacristy of the Librarius, the blue figures standing guard upon it, growing rapidly from miniature proportions to those of warrior godlings. Sanguinius spread his wings to their fullest extent. The snap of arrested air stopped his descent with delicious suddenness. With a lightness that seemed impossible, Sanguinius alighted upon the battlement. Cool air spilled from his wings as they beat a final time and folded upon his back. The Master of Angels shook his feathers out as he stepped forward. They ruffled, smoothing themselves with the twinges of minute muscles. Sanguinius shivered. Flight aside, the resettling of his plumage was among the most pleasurable sensations he knew. When he had been a boy, he had preened his wings with his hands, clearing them of dirt and re-knitting the barbels together. It had helped him to think and to come to terms with what he was. Now he had others to perform this duty for him, honoured servants of his legion. Several of these appeared between the ultramarines lining the rampart, anticipating his arrival as always. With reverent hands, they smoothed down those few feathers that had not settled of their own accord. His pinions took care of themselves, being so large and connected directly to his flight muscles, but his coverts often required attention. He flicked out his wings a little again to allow his servants better access. The feathers arranged to their satisfaction, they draped decorative chains over the closed wrists of his wings. He waved them away, and they vanished with bows back into the half-light whence they came. Sanguinius strode past the motionless guardians of Hera, Invictarus Suzerians, the most highly honoured of Gilliman's warriors. The Space Marines were locked rigidly as statues. The banners they held in their hands cracked with a life the legionaries seemed not to possess. A cohort of Praesental Guard jogged past. They snapped crisp salutes to him, their perfect lockstep unaffected. Sanguinius returned the gesture with as much respect as he could muster, masking his irritation behind a solemn face. Gilliman's realm was large by any standard, but it was but a part of a much greater whole, and the circumscribed borders of Imperium Secundus pressed in on him as surely as the walls of a doll's house. Having his brother's soldiers crowding his every step worsened the sense of entrapment. The plaza of attendance was empty of supplicants at this hour. There Gilliman's warriors gave way to the sanguinary guard of the Blood Angels Legion, golden statues replacing the blue. The plaza was a vast stepped pit in the centre of the fortress. The doors to his throne complex were at the far side. More arena than public space, the plaza seemed to him. Despite his stature, he felt small as he crossed it. This insignificance was in marked contrast to the way it usually made him feel. By day, the plaza intensified the claustrophobia Sanguinius suffered in his position as emperor. During the early days of Imperium Secundus, legionaries from all legions clamoured for his attention, That had settled down as the shattered legions joined the patchwork ranks of Imperium Secundus's armies. Once the shock of the betrayal was over, they had set themselves upon the business of revenge. They were warriors, after all, but the places of the legionaries had been taken by mortal men and women from all over Gilliman's realm. The business of government was all-consuming, whether one was a figurehead or not. How Rabute managed to administer such a sprawling collection of worlds without losing his temper every 10 minutes was beyond him. At those times the plaza was crammed, it seemed very small indeed. Not all of the supplicants came there for reasons of business. A number simply wished to look upon Sanguinius. These pilgrims disturbed him, but their ranks grew daily. They doted upon their celestial angel emperor. The stories they told dazzled themselves against the more mundane truth of him. There was talk of a growing cult that worshipped their father as a god, an alarming repetition of Lorgar's heresy, even stronger now that Terra was feared lost to the Warmaster. Now Sanguinius too had come to the uncomfortable situation where he had to deny his own divinity. He was an angel in form only. He was not a god. Terran vertebrate organisms were all tetrapods. 4 limbs were given each. He had 6. If he had been gifted an additional set of arms rather than wings, he doubted very much that he would be regarded so highly. None of his brothers had these extra limbs or anything like it. A 4-armed emperor would be hard to adore. All of the Primarchs had their quirks, the same superhuman physiology, a unique apportioning of their father's many gifts. Some bore physical differences, but the majority of these were not of their father's making. Ferus's hands, Magnus's missing eye, Vulcan's coal-black skin, Angron's barbaric implants. Could it not be the same with him, that the wings came from other hands? His wings were not a divine blessing. He had always feared them to be something else, and since Cygnus, those fears had grown. His wings were a teratology. The simple fact of Sanguinius's wings was that among all the Primarchs, he was the only true freak. And yet, they had been his flesh and blood since birth. As much as a piece of him feared the truth of their provenance, the entirety of him loved them. Much good had come of them. Had they not been deemed so beauteous that they had stayed the hands of the mutant-hating tribes of Baal? And perhaps, he thought as he soared on his lonely flights through the skies of Macragg, it was the very fear of the corruption his wings represented that prevented him from becoming corrupted. He had been tested on Cygnus Prime, and he was being tested again. Macragg presented a different kind of test. He had mastered his inborn fury on Cygnus. Here he must go further and learn patience before he faced Kabanda again. That time would come, as surely as the death he saw in his mind's eye. He smiled ironically. Fury came easily to him. The calm to hide it was a less simple emotion, but one long practiced. Patience had never been his strong point. The tall doors to the receiving chamber swung wide at his approach. A long avenue, ornate as a cathedral's nave on a backward world, divided another monumental space in 2. This place, too, was crowded to bursting during the times of audience. In the evening, it was empty but for his honor guard. Statues of the warrior kings of Macragg lined the way to the far end, where other doors, huge and bronze and set into a multiply vaulted arch, led into the throne room's antechamber. The sharp smell of outdoor air curled from Sanguinius as he marched his way down the avenue, his last feelings of freedom evaporating with it. "This better be important, Ascalon," he said to himself. The second set of doors opened up. The antechamber was a tiny space in comparison to the plaza and hall that preceded it, 8 of Sanguinius's strides across. Tall windows lined the side, set into delicate traceries of stone. They were set directly upon the walls of the fortress of Hera, artificial cliffs faced with massive blocks of ashlar that dropped sheerly 300 meters to the city. A statue of middling merit occupied much of the right-hand side of the chamber, but it was not there for its artistry. The whole thing was laced with explosives, a last-ditch booby trap for those who might seek to lay the new emperor in the dirt with the old. Sanguinius paused before the master of mankind. The emperor looked off to one side, his blank eyes fixed on an invisible vista. "Why did you have to die, father?" whispered Sanguinius. "I am sorry for my presumptuous assumption of your title. Rabute says you would understand. I am no longer so sure." He touched the armored foot of the figure. "I am sorry for my uncertainty also. I am sorry we have failed you." Sanguinius bowed at the waist and touched his forehead, then passed through the golden doors of the throne room. Another gargantuan hall, with a broad, high-vaulted roof supported by two colonnaded arcades. A balcony ran along the bottom of the dome, capping the center of the space, directly above his throne. His throne, he thought. The idea was ludicrous. Indeed, it felt like a game. The throne room was big enough for Sanguinius to take flight within, but he avoided doing so. He felt like a caged bird when he flew in there. Instead, he walked down the long aisle. "Ascalon? I am here, my son. What troubles you so much to call me down from my meditations?" There was no response. One of the banners lining the avenue rippled in a sudden cold draft. Sanguinius glanced at it, the trailing end of it flapping near where Gilliman had spent his wrath on the wall. Sanguinius turned about. Most of the standing candelabra were out. A few lumen globes hovered in the air, casting a dim light that failed to penetrate the shadows, confounding even his Primarch's eyes, where they gathered most thickly. The room was cold. His feathers shifted as the skin around their shafts tightened. He paused and sniffed the air. Beneath the chill scent of coming rain, there was a rank smell, noisome as the old filth of an uncleaned abattoir. Hesitantly, he walked forward, every sense alert to danger. There was something very wrong. Sanguinius regretted his lack of battle plate. "Ascalon!" he shouted. His voice thundered around the empty throne room. He approached the throne, glittering emptily under a shaft of light. Gilliman had an aseptic way of doing things, but he had a talent for theatricality where it suited his goals. He walked up the dais, and from there was able to look up and down the throne room's entire length. "Light!" he commanded. The candles did not burst into flame as they should. The sparsely situated lumens remained the only source of illumination. There was a thickening of the shadow in the darkest corner. Sanguinius marched towards the dark spot. The vile smell grew stronger, and he half drew his sword in response. Sanguinius reached the shape. A dark cloak of stinking, filthy material had been set up against a column. Its placer had cunningly arranged it, imbuing it with a semblance of human shape by means of precise folds. The angel reached out and touched the cloak, and it collapsed with a fetid waft. He slid his sword back into its scabbard with a click.
"I'm behind you, Sanguinius," said a voice, soft yet commanding the whole space of the throne room. Sanguinius turned to face it, his sword coming clear of his scabbard with a musical rasp. Sat in Sanguinius's throne, Ascalon, unmoving at his feet, was his brother.
"Ave, Imperator," said Conrad Kurz.